I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
And let's talk about what lesbians have found.
Let's hang out.
And let's listen to two lesbians shout.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Les Hang Out, the podcast where we're going to
fly
from the West Coast. I'm Lee Holmes Foster.
And from the East Coast, I'm Ellie Brigida. To those of you who have been with us through this whole journey, thank you as always for listening. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're excited to have you here. Here's what's happening this week.
This week in the Lesdom.
This week in the Lesdom is a place where we can touch base each episode about things going on with the podcast or otherwise. This week, we have the Wilds Trivia coming up on December 15th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can get your tickets at bit.ly/thewildstrivia. Make sure you get those by the end of today. We really want to see you there.
We also want to remind everyone that in Season 6, we have started releasing Patreon-only bonus episodes. We have released 4 of them already. The last one we put up was on Mulholland Drive. We had a lot of thoughts on that movie. You're not going to want to miss these, especially because our next one is going to be coming out. It's a little Christmas present for everyone. It's coming out on December 26th, and it's going to be on Chasing Amy. So if you want to listen to those,
that
Ellie's already.
God, I cannot wait to talk about it. Also, the actress from Chasing Amy was just on the L Word Generation Q and is Alice's new love interest. So I was like, oh my God, perfect timing. But that movie
perfect timing
wrecks me.
So just a reminder, you can get those bonus episodes if you join our Patreon at bit.ly/lespatreon. And we're having a lot of fun with them. So we hope everyone's enjoying them as much as we are.
We also want to let you all know that our Should Have Been Gay episode 100 is coming up soon. Keep an eye out. We are going to be hosting a live event for it on Zoom. So keep an eye out for that. Whenever we have it up, we will let you know. You can get your tickets.
In the Greater Les universe, I feel like everyone's talking about White Lotus, and I haven't watched White Lotus yet. Even like my straight friends are watching White Lotus.
I haven't watched it yet either.
Is it gay? Does it actually get gay?
There's some gay things that have happened recently. So apparently, I looked this up so I could talk about it, but Valentina is one of the characters who's in love with Isabella, and Isabella has a male fiance, so she's sad about Isabella. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners. And so she ends up having her first experience with another woman, with Mia, who's a sex worker at the who comes into the restaurant that she works at.
This show sounds messy.
Oh, yeah. And I think Aubrey Plaza's in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a great cast. I should honestly start watching it. I watch it.
I mean, I feel like everyone likes it. I just haven't had time. I haven't had time to dive in
but
yet. So
there was apparently a really great lesbian sex scene. So we have to check it out.
Okay. We'll get on it.
Also, Margot Robbie keeps talking about wanting Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy to date in the movies, so...
She's correct.
Let's do it.
She's absolutely correct.
We all want to see it. Let's do it. Yeah. That's what's happening this week. Back to you, Ellie and Lee.
Thanks, Ellie and Lee. We are so excited to bring you episode 9 of season 6, Gancient History. And we are joined by a very special guest today to help us dive into that history. Kirsty Lohr is a writer and English teacher. She loves women, football, history, and comedy, but not necessarily in that order, and lives in Brighton with her partner and their son. Kirsty, thanks so much for being here.
No problem. Ancient history. I love it. I love a pun. I love a pun.
And so do we.
And that is so just magic.
If it's not in that order, women, football, history, and comedy, what's the correct order?
You know how many, so many people have asked me that. I didn't even write that. And like people are like, hey Kirsty, what's the order? And I'm like, I don't know. Women. Let's say women. Women is the order.
Women's definitely the order. Yeah.
You got it.
Well, women does come in first in that bio. So someone does something right when they wrote it.
Yeah. They knew the audience, I guess. Yeah.
Women.gif. Correct. Okay.
And then
the rest in varying orders of importance.
How I feel on the day, yeah.
Yeah. I love it. So we're here to talk about your book, A Short History of Queer Women. So why don't you just tell us a little bit, what's the book about? What inspired you to write it?
Okay, so I guess the title says it all really, doesn't it? A Short History of Queer Women. I wrote it because, for two reasons, basically. The first reason was for me, really, and maybe other people like me, but I'm 36 years old and, you know, that's not old, really. I mean, I tell myself that every day, but in terms of technology, you know, it's ancient, especially for a young gay kid like me from Manchester in the UK. And we didn't have the internet. I mean, we did, but no one had it in the house. We barely had it in school. There was still a bit of, and people didn't really know what to do with it. So I kind of realized I was gay about 15. And before that, I was so certain that I was straight. So it really hit me hard and it just completely changed my life. And when I find something out or when I want to know, I like to find out every single piece of information about something that I'm interested in. So for about 2 years, I was completely closed off from a lot of people just trying to figure it out, really. And there was just no one on TV, no one really in the media. You had Ellen back then, but, you know, the Ellen thing was weird back then. You know, it was a weird thing. If you even talked about her, you'd be so worried that someone would think, oh my God, you're a lesbian. And there was just nothing there. And you'd really try and find pieces of information and it's just scattered everywhere. There was nothing chronological. So I just thought, wouldn't it be amazing if there was just a little book, you know, that just had right from the beginning up until the current day of just all these queer women just having a life and having lots of sex, because that was important to me as well to include that, and just loving each other. And then the second reason was, you know, I've done a lot of queer theory and a lot of gender studies and a lot of lesbian studies, and it's just so academic at times and it can be really overwhelming, especially for me. I mean, I'm not really good at stuff like that, reading things like that. A lot of it goes over my head, and the jargon especially, and I enjoy those subjects, so it can be a bit overwhelming and a bit isolating and inaccessible. So I wanted to write something that was accessible to people who maybe felt the same as me. And it was an easy read, you know, because history books can be quite dense and academic again. So I just thought, I'm going to write how I talk, really. And then I did. And yeah, that's what came out of it. And that's it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I feel like we should preface for any of our listeners who might be interested in the book, but who have that, like, because I think a lot of people do, right? You have that sense where you're like, oh, I'm not the kind of person who reads like nonfiction, academic, like historical accounts. It's not that. It's not that. If you want like a fun, easy read, it's funny, you know, like And the other thing that I love about that is it's so fun to just like have humor around so many of these topics, which like you don't get all the time, especially in like academic circles, you know, where it's like I feel like there's always this sense of you're like, if something's funny, it's less serious, you know, and you're like, no, it's funny,
especially
it can be funny.
Especially with the history of with lesbians in general and queer women and queer people. I mean, it's depressing. I mean, in this book, it's depressing. You know, no one really has a happy life in this book, but there are happy aspects of their life. And they do a lot of funny things. And lesbians have this reputation and these stereotypes as, you know, the boring ones of the LGBT community. You know, we have this lavender color that's associated with us. That's just...
Careful, the Swifties are going to descend.
I know.
Yeah.
But we just kind of get labeled as, you know... We don't have sex, or, you know, lesbian bed death. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is not true, because a lot of stereotypes are true, which is quite another funny thing about lesbians, is that we do go into those stereotypes often. But then, you know, we also do have sex with a lot of people, and we like having sex. And I think that's not just lesbians, that's women in general. And a lot of queer people enjoy having sex and enjoy dating and are passionate and do ridiculous and absurd things with other women or in relationships, like the heterosexual community do. Like, we all do those things, but all you ever really see in the media is this person came out and then they died. And that's basically what you see.
Yeah. Also, I like that you're talking about these like stereotypes, because when I was reading the book, like, I do feel like it's like littered with stereotypes in the best way. So like, what were some, like, when you're doing your research, what were some of your favorite ancient stereotypes where you're like, oh, these like historical lesbians like U-Hauled together? Or like, I like too, like, there were a lot of like lesbian players that you're talking about, you know what I mean? Like, the Shane archetype lives in history. So like, what were some of your favorites?
I think the one with Sappho, where she played the guitar and she had to cut her nails to do it, she needed to keep them long to play the guitar, but she needed to cut them also to have sex with other women. So that was a dilemma for her. So she invented the plectrum, which I just think is genius. Like, that is like some good lesbian thinking, DIY, love it.
She literally
is like the inventor of the pick.
Yeah,
like the guitar pick,
just because so she could get laid.
Like, yeah, she's like, well, I can't pleasure women like this.
Yeah,
I super want to know, like, at the time, who was Sappho? You know, like, because I'm picturing lesbians now, kind of like, you know, in the like, here's Wonderwall style. Like, I'm picturing lesbians now with their guitar being like, oh, I know, like, Tegan and Sarah play like Brandon Carlisle. I want to know, like, who was Sappho playing that she was like, oh, here's the like obvious like lesbian reference that I'm going to sit down and like play for you women.
Well,
I don't know. Sorry. Do you know?
Well, I am one of the co-hosts of a podcast called Sweet Bitter is literally all about Sappho. So, Sappho was playing herself. Like, she wrote music.
Incredible.
But she wrote songs about women. So, like, she was like, oh, there aren't any gay songs. Like, I'm going to write them myself so everyone knows, like, I'm gay. Like, I'm singing this gay song to you and I wrote it about you.
That's
like, Sappho was intense.
Oh, really? And there's just so much evidence as well. Like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, there's fragments of poetry. But there isn't. There's a lot of evidence there that points to her being a massive lesbian. Like... or queer, just, and you know, it's just the amount of times that people are desperate for her not to be.
But it's, you know, insane. Yeah, she's so gay
and loved it as well. Like, she was a very, very proud gay, and in a time when, I mean, obviously we don't know much because the evidence there, maybe, you know, there is evidence, but I mean, it is limited, of course, but there is evidence there. But yeah, from what I've read and from what I can see, it's quite difficult to deny that, you know?
Yes.
Well, it's just ridiculous to deny that. So, yeah.
But like so much of history, like so much of, I'm going to keep saying the word academic because it's just a useful term, but the same mentality that, like, when you go to museum exhibits and you'll see, you know, the constant memes or posts about, like, the little museum placards that have the, you know, oh, interesting, these statues were usually for married couples, but this one is about two women and no one's really clear on the relationship that they had, right? Like, friends. That kind of that kind of mentality is so common. So much of our history does get straight washed over by heteronormativity and comp het and all of these things, right? Like, that's why you have people who still to this day look at Sappho and are like, well, but really, do we know that she was a lesbian? And you're like, yes we do. We clearly obviously do. Like, what are you talking about? And so I think, you know, in the same way that we have to reclaim so many things as queer people, like, getting to reclaim our own history, even if to a certain extent, like, yes, you're always going to be doing some amount of projection of our current terms, understandings, labels, things, sure, fine, but there were history was queer, full of queer people. There's so many queer people. We've existed forever. You know, we did, as you say in the beginning, like, we didn't just suddenly reemerge from the depths when Ellen came out. I mean, we've like been nothing.
No gay activity happened from Sappho before that to Ellen.
Like, we've always been here. Always. It's just, you know, the terminology now that we have is useful, very useful to an extent, but also it can kind of diminish the past a little bit, because, you know, you have this word lesbian, and people can argue, can you really call Sappho a lesbian if she didn't identify as such? And it's like, what she didn't know. What an apple, maybe she didn't know the word apple, like, they use a different word for apple. Like, that's such a ridiculous comment to make.
Yeah, because if Sappho had never seen a squirrel, did squirrels not exist?
Exactly. Right. Shit in the woods. It's just it's ridiculous.
If a squirrel falls on a lesbian in the forest and no one's around to see it,
yeah,
if Sappho's having sex with a woman, but she doesn't call it sex, is it sex?
Well, or if she doesn't call herself a lesbian while she's doing it, right?
Yeah. These sound like lesbian riddles.
Yeah. Sappho's lying naked with another woman, stroking every part of her body. Is that lesbian activity?
I mean, with queer history, you do need it to be as graphic and literal as possible. Okay. And even that is not enough, you know? Even that is not enough. And it's just, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. It still goes on today.
Were there other instances in the book, I'm sure there's plenty, where it's like, we have this written evidence? Like, I feel like some of the people I think about are like Eleanor Roosevelt, or like some of the like really intense letters that people are like, oh no, they definitely just were friends. Like, what were some of the other things in the book that you've come across that are like, this is so obvious and yet people still try to deny it?
Like you said then, Eleanor Roosevelt, it's just, I mean, Lorena Hickok, I mean, is a lesbian. And the letters between them are just so nice and lovely. And it's insane to me how that relationship could be denied when you've read these letters. And Eleanor Roosevelt wore a ring on her finger that Hick had given her. Hick, you know, that's her nickname, Hick. And given her a ring to wear, which she wore all the time. And she wasn't really hiding it either, you know, not really. And I just think that's such an important person as well, Eleanor Roosevelt, in that, you know, first lady, really cool history as well. Like, she lived in England for a little bit, and Marie Sylvestre was this headmistress of this school who was a lesbian. And also Natalie Barney, who's in the book, the big lesbian energy.
Mm-hmm.
She went to this school too. So that's queer in itself. You know, they all went to this school run by this famous lesbian. And
love it.
Yeah. And it's just, if you look at all that history, I mean, even, I'm not necessarily saying they're even a lesbian. I'm saying, you know, that because, I mean, again, if we're going to put those labels onto people, I think the word queer is probably easier and better to use. Mm-hmm. I just like to use the word lesbian in terms of stereotypes because it's just funny. But as a queer person, that whole setup is so queer. And it's just the fact that then she left that place and then met Lorena Hickok, and then they had that relationship that was very, very clear in their letters. And there's also letters that we haven't read too. There's letters that haven't been released, and obviously we know why.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like if these are the letters that have been released, we can take a guess why you might keep some secret. Yeah, you know?
I feel like they literally were like, okay, so we'll keep this one where she like sort of talks about like the side of her lip. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, it might have been a cheek kiss.
The northeast corner of your
like,
lip.
It's okay. Like, this is fine, but like, let's not talk about like her talking. I was like, I don't know how to say this delicately.
There's
just like all these letters between Eleanor and Lorena that are like, I just like can't wait to finger bang you again. You know what
I know,
mean?
That's, like, they don't. That's what's going on in my head. In my head, they're really explicit. I'm like,
yeah,
but they must be right. I mean,
they definitely are.
I mean, we've like what now? You send what sex, whatever. And that's not a new thing, surely, because you read all these passionate letters, and the language is quite flowery. But that is obviously a representation of then. But there's got to be these letters that are always either hidden away or burnt. They're the ones, right? That's like, I'm going to fuck you really hard.
Yeah.
Whatever, right?
Yeah.
Surely.
I know. Well, but they did burn a bunch of them, right? Like, why are you setting these things on fire?
The loss.
Like, things always get burned.
It's too gay. They have to set it on fire.
But that's why it's so funny to me. Is like, you look at these letters, and sure, they're flowery. And you're right. Everything at the time... people were flowery in their writing, right? You had a lot of like when you look at these types of letters between straight couples, people would be like, oh my god, this for that time, this was full of passion. And look at I mean, look, they said the word mouth, like just talking about someone's mouth is like pearl clutching. And then they look at this and they're like, wow, these two women were such close friends.
With Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville-West, I mean, that relationship, people have started now, thankfully, to realize it was true. But there's a letter there from Vita Sackville-West, who is an icon. And she's like, I've just been doing something. Can you guess what it is? I was thinking of you. And it's like, you're obviously masturbating to Virginia Woolf.
No, I think she was baking a pie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was
clearly they were big bakers, very into, they loved it, you know.
Incredible.
Fruit.
Why does no one ever talk about that? They're just like, they were lovers. They like that word lovers just they were lovers. But they were together, they were partners, they were in a relationship, and she was masturbating thinking about it and wrote about it to tell her.
And you know what's really sad to me is then when they do burn all the letters that like really get explicit, I want to know like what did they call finger banging then? You know?
Yeah, like what were they? Will we never know? Or you do know. Oh,
well,
you know.
Ann Lister.
I saw a light.
I know. I was like,
oh, Ann Lister would be the one to write it. Yeah, what did we call it?
Well, she called an orgasm a kiss.
Nice. Yeah. I feel like they do that in the show, right? Like in Gentleman Jack.
I had
Jack,
a great
she...
kiss last night.
Yeah. Just a few.
I mean,
one or two.
Finger banging is not really a term that I use personally either. I mean, I don't know about you guys. It's come up a lot.
It's not. I feel like it's a term that we use as like a joke, but they must have had them, right? Like they must have had things that they would just be like, you're like banging up against the wall. You're doing whatever. Like,
I don't know. Thinking about it now, though, do you like, I don't think I've ever said, I'm going to finger you. Like, I don't think I've ever done that.
Oh, yeah. I don't say that in real life.
No.
No.
So I don't think but talking
amongst queer people, like, I feel like there are terms that, like, if you say finger banging, there's no lesbian who's going to be like, what?
And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
Explain a diagram, please. Like, no, I mean, like, people will get it. I just want to know, like, did they say, like, oh, we're going down on each other? Like, what did they say? You know, like,
I think fucking was used a lot, like it is now.
A historical classic. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, you can't. And it's just, you know, we all know what that means in all identities and all times. I don't know, though. I mean, Ann Lister used kiss for orgasm. Maybe she was a bit too upper class to refer to it as finger banging. Maybe she, I'm sure she said, you know, I'm thinking she might have said
noted,
she used her
noted
hands.
Prim and proper woman, Ann Lister.
Yeah, she hasn't got time for that. But I think she used something like, I think she might have used something about her hands. She would suggest using her hands. And she does talk about using her tongue.
I mean, Ann Lister is one of those that I don't know, maybe like after Gentleman Jack, it's much more like, okay, everyone agrees. But even in the time, Ann Lister was like, okay, we know this is lesbian. Like that wasn't really, like no one was really like trying to pretend Ann Lister was not gay.
Well, correct? I don't know. I think in that time, the idea of someone being a lesbian or just being in a relationship with another woman wouldn't come into their subconscious. So it was just something that they wouldn't even think of. And, you know, yeah. You can sometimes in the show, you do see them like trying to put the dots together. And then it's like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. So even a lot of men at that time and women just they had no idea that was even a possibility.
I don't know why, but when you say that, maybe it's just because like the age my kids are, they do a lot of like dot to dot puzzles, like dot to dot books. I'm just picturing, you know, these kind of like confused people of the time, like Victorians sitting there trying to be like just drawing these little dots, and it's basically just the word lesbian written in like closely spaced dots, and they're trying to be like, where does my line go over here?
That's exactly what it was like. I really
they're like, what
that.
Does it mean?
Well, that's how she was able to kind of get away with it, so to speak, for so long.
Yeah.
Because that's what people were like then. They were just, but even now, you know, people are like that now. I mean, I didn't come out to my dad till I was about 31. And I brought my ex-girlfriend with me to the States. We were together at the time as friends. And like just my whole life, I've obviously been a lesbian. And he just oblivious, completely oblivious. You know, when people just, that doesn't come into their consciousness, they just, it's just like, they just can't see it. And that's now, yeah. You know, that's now. So back then, you know, crazy.
They were not seeing it.
Ann Lister was great though. When we talk about like how you let other people know you're gay or queer or a lesbian, she would go up to women and just be like, hey, do you like Byron? Because he's got like saucy literature. She'd be like, hey, have you heard of Byron? What do you think of Byron? And she'd wait for their reaction.
At the time, like, do you listen to Girl in Red?
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
But like we've all done that, haven't we? Like, you know, oh, I'm gonna go see Tegan and Sarah next week, and you're waiting for a reaction. Like, do they know who those people are?
Oh my god, did you listen to Hayley Kiyoko's new album?
Mm-hmm. Rainbows.
Yeah. Yeah. Or ask about any TV shows. You're like, did you watch First Kill?
Yeah.
Like
Killing Eve.
Yeah, exactly. So like who do you relate to the most in that show? You know, like which characters do you like?
Are you a queer?
Yeah.
Ann Lister's breaking out her guitar, playing some Sappho. You know, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just we might not have had those words, you know, to describe ourselves, but we were still doing the same things that we do now. We just have terms for it, but we were still doing the same tricks and the same things to figure out who was gay, who was not, if someone was interested, if someone wanted to sleep with you. We were still doing those things. So we have, of course, always existed.
I also find it fascinating. There's a bunch of things in the book talking about like queer spaces. And like, I found that really cool because I love a gay bar. Like, give me a gay bar any day of the week. Like, I don't go to straight bars. And, like, I feel like it's, like, the Daughters of Bilitis is amazing to me, first of all, because I feel like we all, like, Lee, we're always, do you know what the Daughters of Bilitis is, Lee?
I do not, but I'm dying for you to tell me.
So, like, well, maybe you can tell it better, Kirstie, but, like, I feel like, the card-carrying lesbian came from it, right? Like, they literally had cards that said Daughters of Bilitis. So you could
be
like,
why do we not have cards anymore?
So you could be like, I'm a daughter of Bilitis. Like, are you? Like, you know, like, this is like a
lesbian
membership.
Why did we lose this part of our history? I want a card.
I'd like a card. Bring cards back. But they also had a manifesto as well. about what they wanted to achieve with this group. And then it was amazing. And very innovative for the time. There were some downsides to it, of course, as is everything in history. But it was just a group of lesbians it started by a couple that were friends with gay men. And the gay men were like, you need to find some lesbian friends and we're going to introduce you to some lesbian friends. And then they did. And then they met more and then more and more, as that tends to happen, all couples. And then they were like, right, we need to create this group. So they created this group and they had a manifesto, and then this magazine, The Ladder, came from it, which is one of the first lesbian magazines in the US, I think, one of. And then that spiraled into loads of different things. I mentioned in the book, there's a writer, Lorraine Hansberry, really, really amazing writer. And she stumbled upon this magazine. She was married to a man and she stumbled upon it. And she just wrote to them just to tell them, she said, "I'm glad as heck that you exist." And that was the original title for the book, but I changed it. And just the fact that she felt the need to write to them to just say, "I'm so happy you exist." I think that's so powerful. And I think we've something that every single queer kid has felt in their life, that someone else exists that is like them. Yeah. Yeah. And in a time with no internet, you know, you don't have that easy accessibility to other people. You know, you find this magazine, you're like, "Oh my God, there's people here that are like me." I just think that's great.
The original lesbians.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry, what were some of the things in the manifesto?
Oh, it was like, the worst thing about it was it was kind of encouraging people to assimilate to heteronormativity, in that we want equal rights that they have, rather than let's be ourselves and let's kind of showcase our own identity and navigate that in society. It was more of let's assimilate to that, really, which caused friction in the community and, you know, within feminism and things like that. So that was really what was in that manifesto. But with Queer Spaces, like you said, I love that too. I love it so much. I always think if I could go back in time, I'd just totally go to one of those underground gay bars where all the women are wearing tuxedos and just being really cool and like with long cigars and being like, "Hey, you want to come out with me?"
Stage like a pop-up somewhere of that? Like, that's what I want to do, right? Like, can you imagine everyone gets their like 1920s like tux hairdo? Like,
I just love
incredible.
A tux. Like, a tux is just, right? It's like my favorite thing in the world. And it's just, I think it's hilarious that I would go back to a time where like it's illegal and you would have to go and drink underground. I always think like if I went to one of those bars and told them, they'd be like, "What the fuck are you doing? Like, you can go to a
yeah,
bar.
Like, you have it great. Yeah. Like, please, like, yeah.
You can go to Why a bar, you're fine." But they just seem a bit more refined, you know, than the bars we have today. I don't know.
Well, and I think there's always been something about, like, I mean, yes, I understand. Like, obviously, there were a lot of downsides to being a historical gay. Sure. I'm not going to argue against that. But, like, there is, even today, right? Like, even with the much lower amount of stigma and persecution, not like non-existent, and again, like globally, depending on where you are, can be very different. But I think for many of us, you know, like we're not existing in the same world that a lot of these people were living in. But there is always something that's like fun about having that, like, we are part of this secret taboo underground community 100%. That like you don't get to be a part of. You're not one of us. We're one of us. Here we are. Here's our little space. We made it. It's for us, you know.
And I don't know if you get that now, though. I feel that now a lot of the time. That I'm part of this community that's just amazing, and it's just full of really cool people that are just, you know, and I think I mentioned in the book that lesbians specifically are really funny, and we are funny people. And I don't think that gets talked about a lot, because it's just, we usually just see the dark and the depressing side of being a lesbian or a queer woman.
It's just, here's a historical lesbian. Here she is dying sadly, destitute and alone.
But we're like so fun. We're really, really funny. And the absurd things that, and I know a lot of my friends and me myself, you know, when you just, you first fall in love with someone and you do a lot of ridiculous things. And I just, the story in the book of Vita Sackville-West, and she runs off to France with her lover, and her husband at the time is like dealing with the Treaty of Versailles, which is a really serious thing in Europe, and he's had to charter a plane across the channel just to go and get her because she just won't come home. And I just love these stories. I just think they're great, and it's just, you know, it's extreme, but that is something I can kind of relate to a little bit, is that you do go a bit mental, don't you, when it's you've fallen in love for the first time and it's two women. It's so intense. It's so intense.
Yeah, there's definitely something about the like lesbian love stories that are far more intense. Yeah, you're just like, oh,
the longing is out of control. Yeah. It is absolutely the kind of longing that makes you flee the country and then be like, fuck you, when someone when they're trying to get you back.
I love too, like, some of the more like Harlem Renaissance stuff you were writing about, where like, who is it? Bessie Smith is like, I can have any Or Ma Rainey was like, I got everyone. Who was it?
Well, Ma Rainey was the one that just like had orgies all the time.
Yes, chorus girl, chorus girl orgy. Yeah.
Love it.
Incredible.
And then you've got Gladys Bentley just walking around in a tux, just looking incredible and just owning it, like completely owning it. The Harlem Renaissance was amazing. Something that is just not spoken about enough. And obviously, you know, of course, Black culture, queer Black culture, that's not going to be the top of every historian's read, yeah, is it? Which is unfortunate. But once I delved into that, oh, there was just so much, so, so much. Ma Rainey, Gladys Bentley. It was just amazing. All these queer characters just running around in tuxes, just being really cool. And queer men too. There's just a lot of things were going on in that time. Drag was becoming popular.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people like watching the League of Their Own series, like, just because there were, I've seen so many things where people are like, it's not just getting to see like queer people of that time period that like we don't get to see very often, we don't get to see these stories, and we know they were there and we know this was happening, but that especially in the show, I think the amount that they focused on like the queer Black culture of the time, that was so important and so relevant, and like, and that almost never gets covered,
never,
right?
And it's show, they did that so well. And
yeah,
because I love the original movie, I love it so much, and you know, that was so gay, that film, but it wasn't.
Yes,
it was. But I loved the new series. I think every queer person, yeah, did. You know, the excuse wasn't it for the first one, because in the first one there's a Black character, isn't there? And they're like, you can't play, and that's literally the end of that story.
Right.
And there's just no excuses, because it's like they're saying you can't play, so this person just went back home and then never did anything interesting.
Right.
And it's like, that's just such a stupid, these excuses do my head in. They do my head in the most, in that it's just an excuse for you, because you don't want to make the effort into sharing these stories.
And it's also, it's the what you're describing. So we've talked a lot about the, sorry, this is like such a long aside to make this comment, but I'm going to do it anyways, because whatever. It. When we have talked in the past about, I don't know how familiar you are with The Prom, the musical,
none,
right? So The Prom is a musical, and it's always kind of trotted out as like it's the lesbian musical, because the story is about a girl who wants to bring her girlfriend to the prom and can't, basically, right? Like the school's like, no, the parents are all like, no, we're going to throw our own prom where you can't come, silly lesbians. And so what's funny is someone wrote this whole musical where they're like, wow, isn't it so funny that you have like the way the musical is structured is it's about these four people who are like, two of them are like Broadway actors who are kind of, you know, like falling out of the spotlight and whatever. And so they decide they're going to like revive their careers by going out to this little small town and saving this lesbian with her prom. And they don't have any sort of self-awareness that they're like making the whole thing about them. Right? That's who these characters are. And then someone wrote a musical that focuses on those characters instead of the lesbians. And we're like, how? How do you not have the self-awareness to like see what you did here, how you did the same thing in your story? And when you talk about people writing like the first, like the movie, A League of Their Own, and they're like, wow, isn't it so terrible that like they wouldn't let these Black women play baseball and like they didn't care about their stories. So like, anyways, bye. And you're like, how do you not?
I don't know.
Did you not see what? Did you miss it?
But also,
you did this. Did the thing. That was the thing. You did the thing yourself. You just
like,
did it,
and that was that. But then,
and that was that. Exactly.
But with queer character, you know, it's baseball. There's got to be one lesbian in that team, if not just, you know, just one. Maybe someone bisexual. It's baseball, right? Like, I don't know. We don't have baseball in the UK, but I from looking at it, I get the impression that there are a lot of lesbians that play baseball.
Yes. Plus, well, important question, now that Madonna just came out, when's a League of Their Own season two Madonna cameo, when?
Yeah.
Yeah, she came out on TikTok.
What? What?
I also, that's all. I feel like also, like, has she not been out? Like, do we not acknowledge that Madonna's already
came out as what? Queer?
Yeah.
But then, like, we knew that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like, it's
but,
not
but
really
now the straights are freaking out about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We saw that.
I had no idea. I'm out of touch. I need to get back with it.
It's okay.
Okay, sorry. Bring us back, Ellie. Bring us back.
I'm like, where are we going with this? I want to talk a little bit. This is like closer to our current times, which I feel like makes it, I don't know, interesting to dive into. But there's a bunch of stuff about feminism, right? Like, I feel like, okay, we talk about men, straight men erasing queer people. But then there's also like this whole feminism wave that also is trying to erase lesbians, right? Yeah. Like even Betty Friedan,
yeah,
like wrote about lesbians as the Lavender Menace.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Just like, what are your thoughts on that and stuff you figured out from the book?
Just firstly, though, when she did say the Lavender Menace, another example of lesbians just being really funny is that they got it printed on a t-shirt and just started wearing it. And I thought that was hilarious. They were like,
we should bring that back. That we should get more Lavender Menace shirts.
Let's get some Lavender Menace shirts. Yeah.
But feminism in itself is very problematic at times. You know, I'm a huge feminist, and I really try to check my privilege and really try and understand it. But as the waves go on, you know, exclusion was a huge thing, because first wave feminism was all white upper class women, you know, people that could support themselves or had supportive husbands, all white, completely white. And then as it moved on and moved on, you know, it would be a bit more inclusive, but it was as long as they were getting sorted first, then they would move on to the people of color. In terms of that separation, that's how it separated a lot, because people of color were just being completely ignored, and then so were queer women, and a lot of lesbians were annoyed about that. But then there was also a lot of separation within the lesbian community, because you had a lot of political lesbians that were they chose to be a lesbian, even though they would probably identify as straight, but they chose that path because they felt it was a rebellious act and it was good for the cause. And, you know, a lot of lesbians had a problem with that. And there was just a lot of conflict. And, you know, I feel like you see that a lot today, actually, in the community. There is a lot of conflict because there's a lot of terminology and vocabulary that is being invented or just being used every day. And it takes a while for people to catch up and use it and feel comfortable using it, and there's that fear of using it wrong. So there's always a lot of conflict within these communities, when really we should be fighting the oppressor, unfortunately.
Yep.
And that's what the oppressor usually does, is creates conflict. But yeah, these feminists weren't great at the time. They were not very inclusive, and as time has gone on, it's become better. But yeah, Betty Freeman, I don't know if you watched that show with Kate Blanchett, I can't remember. It's called Miss America, isn't it?
I have not, but
it just totally forgot.
Ellie's like turning it on right now.
No, but I know it.
Like,
know
watch it for Kate Blanchett, but
yeah, yeah.
But for just like lesbians, it's not great. I mean, it's there, but it's subplot, and also black lesbians subplot.
The one thing that I find the most fascinating is the political lesbianism of just the fact that like someone's like, you know what, like I want to like say fuck the man so much that I will not fuck men, like literally I will not even have sex with you, I only choose to communicate with women, sleep with women, like do everything with women, like I will not even give you any sort of satisfaction, even though like I identify as a straight woman and like would want to have sex with a man, but like because of feminism, no,
I love it,
I won't do it. Like it's, I think it's sort of badass.
It is.
Like I understand that people are like, you know, but you're a straight woman choosing to be a lesbian, and that like muddies
a bit of the waters.
What we're trying to go for here of like, this is sort of something that we're born with, and it's not really
it's not a choice. What?
And then they're like, oh, but we can choose to be gay. But I'm like, I like it if you're choosing to be gay instead of choosing to be straight. You know what I mean? Like then I get problematic. But that's my thought.
It is badass. But then I just think like when they're having sex with women, like the whole time, and they're just like, ooh, this is not good.
Yeah, they're like, oh, like what I does have the other do person do for feminism?
The other person's like probably identifies as a lesbian. She's like, yeah, let's do this. And the other one's just like, oh, I'm just really not into it.
Oh God. Yeah, yeah. It definitely has some interesting things to dive into. Also, like maybe this is just because I'm a lesbian, but like, I feel like I'm like, if you choose to be a lesbian and you start sleeping with women, like probably you were gay to begin with.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's,
oh, I'm doing it for feminism. Yeah,
I'm not enjoying this at all. This is terrible. Yeah. I'll have to do it some more though, but just because
that's
feminism.
That's what I think is more likely, is that they were really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And we're just like, oh no, no.
I don't know though. But I think that is just a lesbian way of thinking, because I don't know about you guys, but I just tend to think everyone's
well, yeah,
a lesbian.
Obviously.
So I just think, yes. I'm like, you're a lesbian, you're a lesbian, you're a lesbian.
God, listen, Can I tell you, we were literally, my wife and I were just talking about this because now that we have kids, we find ourselves in a lot of like, not, it's not just that like heteronormative, because the world is heteronormative, but you're in a lot of specifically like heteronormative family spaces. And I'm not going to lie, every time, like, it doesn't matter. You go to like the local pool, you go to the park, you go where, like, a birthday party, wherever you are, sometimes we just look around us and we're just like, really, all of you women wanted these men, all of you? Like, it's like, my mind cannot make sense of it. Like, and they're like, I they're great guys. Like, I like a lot of these men. They're good people. But I'm just like, the idea that this many women are like, I don't know why it strikes me differently for some reason than it has my entire life being surrounded by straight women. But I'm just like, fascinating. How?
I've got a little boy and he's 16 months. And yeah, I've noticed that a lot, is that it's just so straight, so heteronormative, wherever you go.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, and because there's something about having kids that, like, especially in straight couples, like, suddenly really reinforces all of these heteronormative, patriarchal, oh my God, it's weird. It's weird.
It's so weird. Even the process, the IVF process, was hilarious. I need to write a book on it.
Oh my God, please do.
It was so traumatic. that's what I'm thinking is my next book, but you know, you can either laugh or cry, but the comments that you get, it's like some people were like, oh, was your baby planned? Or I'm like, what? Like, yeah, I just got my wife pregnant.
I had my favorite response when I like announced at my office that I was pregnant was one of my coworkers who was like, was this a surprise? And I was like, what do you think? Like, I literally answered. I was just like, I just tripped and fell. Awkwardly, what? Like, onto, I don't, what? What do you think I'm going to say here? Like, I slipped and landed on a dick. I don't, like, what? What do you think happened exactly? Like, how would this be an accident?
Like, I mean, we had this one male doctor that was checking his ears, and he was like, oh, who will be the male role model? That was like the first thing he said to us. I was like, do you want that job? Yeah. Is that
are you applying?
Is that what you, do you want that job? And then my son, he was taken into intensive care straight away, which was quite upsetting. So I ran up with him. My wife had a C-section, so she was still in recovery. And I ran up and the woman went, oh, sorry, who are you? And I was like, oh, his mom. And she went, you don't look like you've just given birth.
Oh, my God.
Like, this is not the time to say shit to me like that.
Yeah.
But then you look back at it, you know, it makes me laugh. It's just funny. I live in Brighton, which is a very, very liberal part of the UK, and there's a lot of queer couples, which is nice. So it's not as heteronormative as you would maybe in other places in the UK. But yeah, things do need to kind of catch up.
But please write that book, because it is something else that I know, like, just to like tie us back to historical
games. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Our job is to like slowly keep us on some sort of path. So I remember when we were watching the last season of Dickinson, right? And I mean, granted, I know that this is all like a very invented, projected story onto actual historical people, but I just remember, like, there's that scene where she is with Sue and they're having this conversation about like wishing they could just be a family together, you know. And so I think that it is the thing, like, when you look back, I mean, as we're talking about, yeah, like, these people did not get to have the lives that we have now. Like, they could never have, the same way that, like, you know, oh, we're talking about like Victorians who could not like fill in the blanks to see lesbian right in front of them. It's like, I feel like there are so many queer people who like could not even have dreamed of the world.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
That we have right now, you know, like they could never have envisioned a world where it's just like, oh yeah, here we are. We get to have our little house and have our kids and have our little family and live our lives like this, you know? Yeah. And I think it's why, like, it's not just important to know about our history, but it's important to have that knowledge and to know what that means in terms of like the way that we do get to have our lives now, you know, because it's like in some way, like we do, like I feel like we owe so much to so many of these people who got us here, right? Like there's so much that went into getting us here. And so it's like, you know, you just I feel like sometimes now, especially like, you know, when I sit and look at like my little family and I'm just like, it's like I think it's why that scene like stuck with me so much, because it's gutting. Like it just, it's so hard to like look at so many people who were like, you know, sure, you look at your Sapphos and your Ann Listers and like these people who were just like, this is me and this is who I am and I love it and I'm proud of it, and like still could not have envisioned a world different than the one that they had accessible to them at the time, you know? And it's just like, it's, there's the humor around it. And then there's also like that much more sad reality, I think.
Really sad. Really, really, really sad. And with Ann Lister though, I mean, with Gentleman Jack, the series, when I watched it, it was when they got married, you know, they got married. I thought that was really, really nice in that, you know, she because she was desperate to just have that life of just have a wife. She wanted kids, but obviously, you know, she couldn't. And I think for her, because I've read a lot about Ann Lister as well, I've been to that church too, it's just for her, that marriage or that ceremony that they had together just meant so much to her. And I'm just like, there's a little bit of joy in those really awful moments, but then she got to have that little moment of, sure, it's heteronormative, you're adhering to that, but that's really what she wants. She really, really wanted that wife, and she got that. So there are these nice parts, but yeah, it's really, really sad, really horrible. Like you can't, there's no way they would have envisioned. I always think that, you know, with how me and my wife had our son, we had IVF and she used an embryo from me, so it's like we both kind of made him together. And that is just unthinkable. Even when I was a kid, if someone had said that to me, I was already thinking, I'm not going to have kids. I'm not going to, you know, it was illegal. Marriage was illegal in both the US, in the States and in England when I was a kid. So yeah, I didn't even picture getting married. So yeah, it is amazing to think of all what's come before us.
As we were talking about some of those TV shows and movies, what are some other, like one of the other ones that I notice is like the favorite, you wrote a bit about like Queen Anne. What are some of the other TV shows and movies that like, as you're doing your research, you're like, wow, like this is accurate. And what are some other ones that you want them to make that they haven't made yet?
Well, Gentleman Jack was accurate enough. I really liked how they portrayed Ann Lister as well. You know, like how she walks, the way she walks, like she's always like this. I thought, you know, it was funny. With something that I would love is the Brontes. I want something about the Brontes that is true, because there's a new film out at the moment about Emily Bronte, and there's a romance in it, and there's no evidence with a man. There's no evidence that she had any romance with anyone, and those things really irritate me because there's no evidence that she had any romantic relationships with anybody, but then by default she's straight, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why is that the default?
Yeah.
Why couldn't she, maybe she was bisexual, maybe she was trans, maybe she was queer, maybe she was lesbian, we don't know. So why just make that assumption that, well, also why invent a relationship with someone in the first place? Yeah. That's annoying. And then, but why assume that she was straight when there's no evidence that points towards that? There's actually more evidence that points towards that she may have been asexual. There's more evidence.
Well, that's what I was just going to say too, is like, I feel like, especially with a lot of these people where there's zero evidence, that you're like, you know, asexual people have also existed forever. And the idea that we just have to constantly create romances to understand historical figures is kind of silly. it's
ridiculous.
Kind of unnecessary. So, and then the fact that when we're going to do that, of course, they'll always be straight. Yeah.
And Emily Bronte, like, it's like they're giving her this romance to give her some sort of agency. And it's like, this is the woman that wrote Wuthering Heights. Like, I don't think she needs a romance to kind of give her this role in the world when she's a genius. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre, ridiculous.
Do you think there's a lot of queer writers because writers are queer, or because the way that we find out about people in history is like through literature? Because I feel like most of the people that we hear about are like poets, writers. Like, why do you think that is?
They are all queer, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's how this book started, actually. It was mostly on writers. I don't know. Maybe they have that freedom of expression, so they tend to put it down on paper. But then artists and people that are creative in general tend to be queer. Don't really know why that is. I mean, maybe it is because they feel that they are able to express themselves in their art, maybe, rather than elsewhere. But I don't know. There's probably something to that.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating. Like, when I think about, I do think, you're right. I'm a performer, musician. I'm like super gay.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's like, I do feel like there's like a thing about creative spaces. I feel like maybe it is just the fact that like you can step into like other worlds, like as an actor, like you step into other people's perspectives, right? And then you're like, oh, this perspective actually like feels right for me, rather than like someone who maybe has like never explored anything besides what they're put into.
Yeah. It's a nice way of getting that out, isn't it? I know that's why a lot of people write in general, is because they just want to live through another person. I think with Radcliffe Hall, when they wrote The Well of Loneliness, the character was very clearly based on something that person may have identified as. And it's a nice way of getting that out there and living that truth or that identity through your art, because you can't in the real world.
Yeah.
Which is again, really sad.
Let's go on to something not as sad. And I just, okay. I had this earlier in our outline and I just forgot to ask, but I feel like, you know, it's a great way to end. There's an entire section about like the history of dildos and strap-ons. Like, let's talk about that. This episode's sponsored by Wet for Her. Let's talk about it.
What is Wet for Her? Is that
it's like an online sex toy shop. Yeah, yeah.
Wet for Her.
Yeah.
Is it specifically for queer?
Yeah. It's an online sex toy company for queer women.
Just googling that.
Quick, what's our code, Ellie? What's our code?
I mean, well, I too like, yeah. I forget what it is, but I'll figure it out. But
wait, are you being serious? It is actually sponsored by.
We have a discount code for them.
Hand me the code.
But oh, like have you ever been to Provincetown? Have you?
I really thought you were going to say like, have you ever used a strap-on? I was like, everyone, what is that appropriate?
I don't know if that's appropriate, but
Provincetown. I don't know.
So it's like this suit. It's like it's the gayest place in the United States. Like, it has the most gay people per capita. It's on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, but there is a sex shop there where when you walk in, the front section of that sex shop is like a historic, like it's like a museum, and they have all of these like old dildos and strap-ons and like old sex toys, and like you get to look at them and like see all the stuff. So I think it's so cool. And then you go into the sex shop and like buy a new one. But like, I find it so fascinating that it's like, okay, all this stuff existed. Like, what do you think people were using them for, straights?
I know. And they're really scary, though, the old ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're like, made of wood.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I'd want to use them, but, like, it's interesting to look at them. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen Tipping the Velvet, but that was a BBC drama a real while ago. It really pushed a few buttons, no pun intended. But it was BBC, you know, so everyone was like, oh. But there's a scene in that where she takes out a massive wooden dildo and just rides the young girl. It's amazing.
Incredible.
But yeah, I'm quite fascinated with strap-ons and dildos. And anyway, again, because, you know, women, straight or queer, we don't have sex, do we? So we don't like to have pleasure, or we don't like to make sex even better. We don't do that, mm-hmm. do we? As history says, we just lay there and be quiet. But it's not true. So you know, you say that there's like tons of these ancient wooden or leather, you know, a lot of people had leather dildos. But then also, you know, there was a lot of people in the past who probably would have identified as trans, and they would use this just to feel some sort of connection to, because like we said, they probably have no idea that this would be a possibility for them, but they would wear these leather strap-ons to have some sort of connection to what they wanted to be or perceived to be, which is in itself is also amazing. I'd love to see all these things.
Super cool. All right. Anything else, Lee, before we go into our Q&A? I love ending on a...
You want to end on dildos, Ellie. I'm not going to take that away from you.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, here we go. Well, actually, I'll ask you one more question before we go to our Q&A, which is like, are there any, like, anyone in this book that you're like, we don't talk about them enough, and you're like, you need to know about this person?
Oh, all of them. But Natalie Barney, I love. She's just such a lesbian. I just love lesbians so much. I really do. I love queer women. I love lesbians. I just love it all. I love all the history, and I just love the ridiculousness nature of a lot of these people. But Natalie Barney, she had like a temple outside of her house where she just boned women. I just loved it.
She's like player upon player, right? Like, she literally player. Just like sleeps with everyone. Yeah.
No one talks about her, but then a lot of people don't get spoken about because maybe there were issues with them. She ended up going to Italy and like ratting out a lot of Jewish people. And there's a lot of confusion over whether she did it to be safe or she did it. There's not much information about it. So I think people are a little bit afraid to talk about her. But then lesbians are not perfect. You know, there are some mean lesbians out there. There are bad lesbians. There's a book. I don't know if you've read it, Bad Gays. You know, there are bad people, like there are bad straight people. Doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about them. We should highlight the bad things they did. But yeah, she slept with a lot of women. She loved it. She moved to Paris just so she could do it. I just always envision her in like this big fur coat, just being like, hey, she was American. That's my American.
That's a good accent. Yeah.
It's exactly what we saw.
So her,
like.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, her for sure. Radcliffe Hall.
Sorry. I want to put your American accent up in a competition against Ellie's British accent.
My British accent.
Oh, sorry, who did this? Who said that? What?
No. Well, what were you saying? I love Natalie Barney. She's the best. She just moved to Paris just to fuck everyone. That's my British accent.
Why? Right. When an American does a British accent, they just turn into Keira Knightley. Like,
yes.
That's it. Like, hello.
Yeah.
I want to have sex with you.
Yeah.
Or like, have you seen Imagine Me and You?
Yes, that is my British accent.
It's like, very Imagine Me and You. Yeah.
Is based on Piper Perabo's British accent.
Yes.
In Imagine Me and You.
Her accent was pretty good. Yeah. she loves a lesbian.
I can do this. That's what it is. It's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's not bad. But I'm from Manchester, though. I'm from like...
We don't have a good catalog. That's the problem. Americans don't have a good... I mean, unless you're like someone who does, you know, like acting or something for your job. We don't have a good catalog of like the different regional... Every US person has like one... Here's my one British accent, and that's what you're getting.
It's always... it's always Pirates of the Caribbean. That's it.
I think a Brit would... With an American, we just do like... California.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, is that California?
That was probably, like, I think that coffee. Was Southern.
New York.
Yeah, that's good. That is exactly how people in New York talk, though.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have found a lot of people in New York have the most dramatic accents, but to be fair, my family's from Boston, so they also have very dramatic.
Oh, Boston.
Yeah,
they say cow.
Yes, they do.
I love that accent. It's hot. That's a really nice accent.
That's so funny. I find it to be... I don't know.
Tell your mom she's got a hot accent, Ellie.
Yeah.
Is it not considered an attractive accent?
No, I think it is.
A Boston accent is like, Ooh, like you could like just turn me over on the table like that. That is an accent.
Yeah. Well, I think also because like the Boston accent. Well, this is going in a weird direction, but it's fine. I would argue that the Boston accent is really the original American accent because the settlers from
is that what they sounded like back then?
It's the closest to It's the closest to British. So I wouldn't be surprised if British people were like, oh, because the British like, came over. Ooh. The Boston accent is like what the British accent turned into in America.
Yeah, that's a very British thing as well. Right? Like to just love yourself.
Yeah.
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 But I heard that the settlers went over and I love that you say the settlers. And they went over and like stole the land off everybody.
Yes.
But
yes.
they had like a really high pitched voice, apparently. This is what I read. And then it deepened over time. And then that's why Americans have a deep, but then Americans don't really have a deep accent, do they? Maybe.
I don't know.
I think it's deeper than a British
about accent.
Yeah, interesting.
I don't know. Who knows?
Fascinating. Fascinating. All right. Let's go into our Q&A. I'm ready for this.
Q and gay.
Question number one. Who's your favorite lesbian poet? A. Sappho. B. Audre Lorde. C. Emily Dickinson. Or D. Mary Oliver.
That's so difficult. Why would you do
that? These are all going to be an attack.
Audre Lorde. I know. I want to say Audre Lorde because no one really talks about her. But I have to say Sappho because she's the OG, isn't she? Mm-hmm. OG.
OG.
OG lesbian.
There's no wrong answers in the Q&A. It's okay. Okay. Question two. I'm sorry. These are all going to be terrible. Who are your favorite letter lovers out of A, Eleanor Roosevelt, B, Anne Lister, C, Queen Anne, or D, Charlotte Bronte?
Charlotte Bronte, because I love her. She's super gay. And I'm reading a biography about her at the moment with Ellen Nussey, who she wrote about. And those letters are just so gay. And like, they're always like stopping each other from getting married. Incredible. That's all they do is just stop each other from getting married because they want to marry each other. So Charlotte Bronte,
amazing,
hands down.
Question number three. What's your favorite lesbian historical TV show or movie? A, The Favorite, B, Gentleman Jack, C, Dickinson, or D, Vita and Virginia?
Oh, I didn't like Vita and Virginia. It was such a letdown.
I didn't like it either. I know I watched it once and I was like, I'll never watch this again.
I was desperate for that film as well. I'd say I do like Gentleman Jack. It's a bit cheesy, but it actually, like, I've like got a black heart. I don't cry. I'm very unemotional and it nearly made me cry. So for that fact, it has to be Gentleman Jack.
Which part? The getting married in the church?
Just when they got married.
It's
like,
a lot. It's emotional.
Just so emotional. It made me go up there. I went on a lesbian pilgrimage, is what I called it. So I went all the way up to Yorkshire and just went to all of those places.
Oh, I love it. Okay, question four. Are you a card-carrying member of the Daughters of Bilitis? A, yes. B, no. Or C, do you have a card?
Oh, C, do you have a card? I want to know
who
I'm dealing with.
Fine, fair.
I won't tell you unless I know if you have the card.
Yeah, unless you tell me.
All right. Question number five, which historical term for lesbians is your favorite? A, sapphic, B, tribade, or C, sewing circle? Or D, lavender menace?
Or E, or rug muncher.
Yeah.
I do like sapphic. I do like that. It's coming back have you heard, like, it's coming back in fashion recently?
Oh, yeah.
People are like, oh, I'm a sapphist. And I'm like, oh, really? So yeah, I'm into that. I like it. I think cool, like where it came from. Yeah, I'd go with that. Let's bring it back. Let's start calling
the
each
OG
other
term. We love it.
Love it.
Yeah.
Remember, you can also give us your own answers to this episode's Q&A questions on our Twitter at Les Hangout Pod. Kirstie, thank you so much for hanging out with us and talking all of the queer women. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter. I just got on it actually, reluctantly. But hey, it worked today with you guys.
Yes.
But yeah, didn't it? But yeah, Twitter, Kirstie Law.
And where can they find your book?
Anywhere. I mean, like, yeah, it's actually in a lot of places, weirdly. It's out in the States in November 8th, I think. So yeah, independent bookstores, queer bookstores. I'd recommend getting it from a queer bookstore. Let's help them out a bit. You can get it on Amazon too.
And other than your upcoming book on, the gay IVF journey, any other projects you want to let people know about? Any other stuff you're working on?
Well, that is something that I've started looking around on. I mean, I've I've gone through all my WhatsApp messages at the time and put them down on my computer just so I can get the memory of it, because I don't write diaries or anything like that. And that's something that I definitely would like to work on, because IVF for lesbians and queer people, you don't know anything about it. And the only way you do know about it is to ask your exes, because, you know, we're all friends, lesbians.
You go through the chart, sure.
You do. That is genuinely how me and my wife figured it out. Like, we went to this other person who I'd like briefly dated, and then we were like, hey, how did you have your child? And then that's it. So any information that is funny too, because I do like to make things funny. So yeah, that would be something that I would like to work on for sure. But I just love writing about lesbians.
Amazing.
I just love it. And queer women. Yeah. So I'll just keep writing about those people.
Cannot wait for A Short History of Queer Women. Make sure you get your copy. Thank you so much, Kirsty.
Thank you.
Let me hear you say hip, 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 well, yeah.
We love hearing from all of you. We love continuing to build this community, and we just want to shout out some of our favorite things every episode. And this week, we want to shout out first a user on Twitter who messaged us, Park Welch's, saying that they need us to get Christina Tonteri Young on our podcast and have her sing, and that they will offer us their unborn child, which, like, sold. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a child yet, so if you want... Do you want to give me your unborn child?
Kelsey would be thrilled if I showed up with another baby, honestly. So, and we'd be thrilled to have Christina on the podcast. So
let's do it.
Let's do it.
You have made a contract with us. So yeah. Get ready to sign in blood. We will have someone show up at your door tomorrow.
Great.
Also,
it'll be Kristen.
Yes. Kristen will come by with something to prick you. Also, everyone's talking about Warrior Nun. Emma also reached out on Instagram saying that we have to watch it and we need to help save it from cancellation, because it's going to be another one of those Netflix gay shows that they cancel. Fingers crossed it's not.
Fingers
crossed,
man.
So make sure all of you out there are checking it out.
And as always, we want to thank our Lesbian Jesus patrons, Mark Foster,
Tanya Ferguson,
Jacqueline Rose Nishino,
Sarah and Julia,
Alana Rosen,
Lizette Stye,
A.D. Benitez,
and Fiona W.
And our King Princess patrons, Amy and Ellen,
Julia Gonzalez,
and Leah Henley. Thank you all so much. We could not keep doing this podcast without you and all of our patrons.
Remember, you can also find us on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at Let's Hang Out Pod.
You can email us at letshangoutpod@gmail.com.
Or you can check out our website at letshangoutpod.com.
Whatever app you use to listen to podcasts, make sure that you subscribe. That way you'll get new episodes as soon as they go up every week.
We're also putting videos on our YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/letshangoutpod to catch them.
Let's Hang Out is an independently produced show. It's hosted by us. Our audio production is done by Ellie. Our production assistant is Krista Mearson, and various other Twitter shenanigans and I don't know what. What do I even do anymore? They're done by me.
You are an endless well of emotional support and Discord chat.
There you go. Some graphics. Why not?
And some graphics. If you want to support the podcast, you can rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
If you want to support us financially, the easiest way to do that is to join our Patreon. You can find it at bit.ly/lespatreon. You get access to our Discord chat, to our bonus episodes that we're releasing now. You get access to ad-free episodes. It's a good time. All of our Les Essentials viewing parties, all sorts of good stuff.
Also, our Patreon is really what helps us pay for things.
Indeed.
Like, that is the largest source of our income, to pay Kristen, to pay myself for audio production, to pay for any of the things that we do. So if you are a part of our Patreon, you truly, truly are helping us create this show. If you want to get some Les Hangout merch, you can get that at bit.ly/lesshop. You can get tanks, totes, tees, all that fun stuff. And it's perfect holiday season to get some holla gay sweaters. We got a lot of them up there.
Remember, we also have a queer production company. We are making queer podcasts, musicals with guaranteed happy endings. You can find us everywhere at Dollar Bean Prod.
Or you can find us at our website, dollarbeanproductions.com.
You can listen to all of the episodes of our first show, The Flame. They are up on all podcasting apps.
And if you want to support us in making more musicals, you can join our Patreon at bit.ly/dollarbeanpatreon.
If you want to follow us individually, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LSH Foster.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Ellie Brigida. With that, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Lee. and let's hang out again soon.
Let's hang out.